Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host for what we describe as the tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. And we have several important combatants in that war. Lead off will be Congressman Ted Poe, one of our all-time favorite members of the United States House of Representatives. He represents the people of Texas there. And we'll be visiting with him about some issues that are of great concern to him and to us, involving, among other things, China and the sort of mafia operation that is operating against our civil and military sectors. We'll also be talking with him a little bit about the president's new immigration enforcement policy, or should I say lack of enforcement policy, is segment one. Segment two, we'll be visiting with Michael Toscano about some fascinating applications of unmanned technology for a host of military and civilian purposes. It's fascinating what's afoot there. Professor Paul Kenger will be joining us to visit about the implications of losing sight of the importance of peace through strength at a dangerous time in world history. And Dr. Zudi Jasser, one of the most courageous Muslims I know, courageous men I know for that matter, talks about the Muslim Brotherhood, mistakes we're making with respect to it both here and abroad. So all of that ahead in this edition of Secure Freedom Radio. But first, let me welcome back Congressman Ted Poe. He represents the Houston area in the United States House of Representatives. He has been known both for his service to our country in the Air Force Reserves as a judge in Texas, and now representing the 2nd Congressional District of Texas. And Congressman, it's always a treat to have you with us. Thanks for coming back on, especially to discuss a very important piece you had in the Washington Times yesterday entitled Time to Deal with China's High-Tech Mafia. Tell us what the high-tech mafia is in communist China and what it's up to, why we have to deal with it, and how.
Frank, it's always good to talk to you. The Chinese have declared cyber war on the United States, and the United States must recognize this as a nation, and we as individuals, they're doing it several ways. Of course, they hack into our intelligence computers. We're aware of that. But also on the sort of the civilian front, they are notoriously stealing trade secrets and counterfeiting products from the United States. And they do it in an open and obvious way. I think it's being backed by the Chinese government for Chinese to counterfeit all types of products and then sell those worldwide as a fake and to make a profit off that at the expense of American manufacturing industry. And this is covers the gamut from the people, individuals who make guitar strings to hair products to all different types of products. And they are organized thieves of American products and counterfeiting American products. And they do it, and like I said, in an open and obvious way.
Yeah. Congressman, you've said something that I haven't often heard, which is a direct tie-in between the government of the People's Republic of China and this kind of activity, both the hacking kind and the expropriation of intellectual property. Are you satisfied that the evidence is clear-cut, that in fact what's going on here is ordered and undertaken by the Communist Chinese government itself?
Yes, I believe that they are. The Chinese have admitted operating what they call the online Blue Army. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a military unit of hackers who operate offensively on the behest of Beijing. And the United States has become the victim of these hackers over the last few years. So their Blue Army is backed by the Chinese government. And I'm not sure why we sort of take it, why we allow this to occur. And certainly our government doesn't seem to be vocal about the Chinese mafia hacking into all types of our computers.
Yeah, to the contrary, as we'll be talking about with Bill Gertz of the Washington Times tomorrow, the new report out of the Pentagon that finally was broken loose despite some pro-China panda hugger types, as we call them in the National Security Council, Congressman Ted Poe. The evidence is pretty clear that these people are up to no good, but there's still this sort of rhetorical patina that they're our partners and none of this is really threatening to us. I guess one of the things I'd like to just ask you to address, if you could, that sort of stitches these two things together is a report that the Washington Times had last week, I believe it was, by Eli Lake about Huawei, a company very directly involved with, tied to the Chinese People's Liberation Army, and a National Center for Computational Engineering that would be relying upon, it appears, Chinese computer products. Does that concern you as a matter of principle that we might find ourselves introducing trapdoors or Trojan horses or what have you, espionage opportunities for the Chinese by such a reliance on Huawei?
It certainly does. I think we are missing the obvious if we don't recognize that China has a concerted effort to steal things that belong to the United States, whether it's secure national security interest, whether it's the products of private industry. They have a concerted effort to steal it any way they can. And our cooperation with them and giving them information, only makes that situation worse.
Yeah. Congressman Ted Poe is our guest. He is a member of the House Judiciary Committee and a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, one of the most thoughtful men in the United States Congress, by my lights. And let me ask you for your thoughts, Congressman, as a former member of the Judiciary in Texas, as a member of the Judiciary Committee in the House of Representatives, what do you make of President Obama's selective enforcement of the law as it relates to immigration, that is to say, illegal immigration into the United States?
The president, as we all learned in ninth grade civics, is the head of the executive branch, and he's supposed to execute the laws of the land, not supposed to make them, supposed to fulfill his obligation to enforce the laws of the land. Congress makes the laws. Congress has passed laws regarding immigration. And the president has decided, not so fast, I am not going to enforce the law of the land, and has made that public. And the situation is what we call backdoor amnesty, formerly, it's called directly deferred prosecution. And it has occurred in these cases where people are already charged with being illegally in the United States. They've already been charged. They're waiting for their hearings and to be deported. And the president has said, not going to deport these people, not going to have hearings. We're going to defer their prosecution indefinitely, which means they get to stay in the United States.
In some cases, being turned loose out of American detention centers, as I understand it.
That's correct. But those that are detained and not on some kind of bond are just being released. And the number's up to 300,000. Plus, the president has decided in the future not to prosecute, deport certain groups of individuals that he thinks are not really a threat to the United States. Just, you know, ignore the fact that they're committing a violation of the law by being here. They're not going to be deported. So the president's become, instead of the enforcer-in-chief, has become the ignorer of the law-in-chief.
Yeah, we've only got about 30 seconds. Congressman Ted Poe, I understand there's also an opportunity for these people to apply for work permits and Social Security numbers. You represent a border state. What does this mean in terms of job creation, a key priority for all of our political class at this moment in our history, as well as the prospects for intensified illegal immigration into the United States?
Well, this absurd policy on the part of the president is to pander to people to get votes. It hurts states like Texas, to bring in more people that in many cases just become dependent upon the other people in the state, legal immigrants and citizens, for support and their social services, and create, and in some cases does create jobs for them. We need jobs for American citizens, legal immigrants. So it's a bad policy.
Bad policy, bad idea, bad government. And I hope when you get back to town that you will hold him accountable for it. Congressman Ted Poe, thanks so much for joining us from your district work period. And keep up the great work both there in Texas and in Washington. And visit with us again soon, if you will, sir. Next up, we'll be talking with Michael Toscano about unmanned vehicles, how they're changing your world, hopefully making us more secure. Straight ahead. We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
We could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined by a man who is doing very interesting things and has throughout his career. And we're going to visit with him about both the work that he's got in train and that of people with whom he works. His name is Michael Toscano. He is the president and chief executive officer of the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. And you can find out more about the work Michael's engaged in and his member organizations at AUV, as in Victor, S as in Sam, I.org. And Michael, you have a background in engineering. I know you've worked in the Defense Department for many years in different capacities, and now you are kind of at the pointy end of the spear, it seems to me, in a very interesting area of technology, namely robotics for a host of applications. Tell us a bit about sort of where we are today in terms of the application of these unmanned systems in the various domains in which they are now playing a role.
Frank, first of all, I thank you very much for this opportunity. Yes, this is exciting times to be involved with unmanned systems or robotic systems, and depending on how you terminate those. But they pretty much fall in three domains, the air, the ground, and the maritime. And obviously we hear a lot about the air side, and many times in the press you'll hear the words drones. And actually that's kind of a misnomer. Drones were targets that were invented back in the World War I, World War II time frame. The UAVs, the unmanned air vehicles, or even remotely piloted aircraft or remotely piloted vehicles are much more than that today. And when you think of an unmanned system, it really is just a commodity. And the thing that we hear about and see is the thing that flies, drives, and navigates. But that's only about 30% of the overall system. And if you look at this as a commodity or an extension of your eyes, your ears, and your hands, when you put these machines into the user's hands, whatever the mission that they're tasked to do or whatever they've been trained to do, this allows them to do it in many cases at a standoff distance, and in some cases even more effectively and more efficiently.
What we've been seeing, as you know so well, Michael Toscano, is a rapid evolution of these capabilities. What are some of the things that are contributing to that evolution, and can you give us a sense, maybe in any one of those domains, of kind of the state of the art as of now?
There's actually about three or four technology maturation aspects that have taken place. One of them, as we've all been privy to, is the processing capability. The fact that now we have the processing capability in the size of a dime, which was more than we had in the 1960s that did the space program. If you look at the electronic devices that we have, the sensing and perception that we now have available to us is so much better now. It's almost to the point where, like I say, we know we can fly, we can drive, and we can navigate. What we're now trying to do is understand how do we get these technologies or these unmanned systems or robotic capabilities to where they can provide more effectiveness and efficiency to the operators and to the users.
Right. And artificial intelligence, I know, is another element of this, and maybe it falls into one of the other of those categories. But to the extent, I think one of the places where, as we were talking about a moment ago, you have, or we, I should say, all of us, saw this kind of capacity at work was monitoring the rupture of the oil well in the Gulf of Mexico with such devastating effects. Is that sort of emblematic of the kind of uses that we're seeing made of this robotic technology that, that you represent at the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International?
Frank, you are spot on. When you stop and think about all the dirty, dangerous, difficult, or dull missions that exist out there today, and artificial intelligence is one of those emerging technology areas that does allow us now to be able to field this capability. And as I mentioned before, the thing that you see that's either flying, driving, navigating is only about 30% of the system. The rest of the system is made up of those other components of collecting the data and the information, being able to process that, and then have actionable items that come from that. So when you look at, like I said, any of these opportunities to utilize these systems, the operator knows how to do his job better than anyone else. And this is truly an extension of that person to give them standoff distance to allow them to do that, like I said, dirty, dangerous, or dull mission without being injured or be able to operate in an environment that allows them more time to do whatever that mission is. You mentioned about in the Gulf. At a mile deep in the ocean, a human being can only spend 20 or 30 minutes down there, but yet these robotic systems were down there 24-7 for literally over 100 days.
Right. I have the feeling that dirty, difficult, dangerous, and dull is a trademark for your organization. It certainly describes what you're up to. One of the things in doing a little research that I came across, which was fascinating, I gather, is now one of the applications of this technology at sort of the cutting edge is something called a throwbot. Tell us what that is.
Yes.
and how you see that figuring into other military or perhaps even civilian applications.
Well, actually, Frank, you touched upon another good topic, is that what we're starting to see is the bulk of robotic and unmanned systems has come from the military side of the house. But because of that maturation of technology, and we're at a point now where we're starting to see it slide into the civil and commercial side of the house. And when that happens, it's Katie bar the door, because there are so many applications that this technology would be fantastic for. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned the Throwbot. The Throwbot is basically
the innovation that the civil side brings to it, that sometimes the, as you know so well from your time in the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition side of the Pentagon, is stultifyingly slow.
Sure, and that's exactly right. Once you can get this thing commercialized, it'll become much more reliable, it'll become much more safer, and you'll have the cost numbers that'll drive down the cost of these things and be available to most people. Back to the Throwbots. The Throwbots basically is a device about the size of a large softball, or one of those softballs they use out in Chicago there, and basically you throw it into a room or into an area, and it will either expand out into two half of a semicircles with the component in the middle, and it will be able to give you situational awareness or give you a visual and also an audio of what's happening in that room. So rather than a person have to go into a room that might have explosives in it, might have bad people in it, it allows you to have the ability to make an assessment of the area before you physically have to go into the room. You can also have chemical and biological detectors on it, or things of this nature.
It's kind of like Superman being able to see through with X-ray vision through the walls. Michael Toscano is our guest, President and CEO of the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. Let me just, in closing, we've only got about a minute and a half left, Michael, ask you on the point about things becoming commercially available, cheaper, more reliable. I assume that means that the probability that, as you put it, bad people may ultimately get access to this same technology and be able to use it against us is of concern to you too. What's your sense of that, and are there things that your organization or others are thinking about in terms of countermeasures?
Well, you're exactly right. Any good piece of technology can be used for good or for bad. And just as we've seen that happen with many different technologies in the past, this is one where, because of the communications, the secure wireless comms that are going to be necessary in many cases for this thing, and the artificial intelligence that's going to be involved, or the artificial intelligence that's involved with these systems, it is a risk. What we're doing to prevent it, just like anything else, you try to put safety and safeguards in place to make sure, whether you're flying these things or driving them or navigating, so that bad things don't happen with them. And if bad people do get them, it's going to have to require us to have an understanding of what it takes to, in many cases, defeat them as well.
An interesting challenge, one that is presumably on net offset by the value added of these programs. We won't have time to get into it today, Michael, but maybe we can get back to you in the near future to visit a little bit more about two other domains in which these unmanned vehicles are now being applied, namely space and medical applications, to very astonishing effects and real benefit to both the country as a whole, the national security, and in our economy. And we thank you for the work that you're doing in this space to represent this community, this industry, and to help share with us a little bit some of the benefits that accrue to all of us as a result of the innovations that you're making. I hope you'll come back to us again very soon. Again, Michael Toscano, the President and CEO of the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. We'll be right back with more of Secure Freedom Radio right after this.
Thank you, Frank.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And and that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined, I'm very pleased to say, by Paul Kenger. Dr. Kenger is a professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, a distinguished academic and teacher, but also the author of, well, 19 books, I think it is, Paul, is that right?
Not quite that many, but I don't count. So
well,
I'll take 19 if you want to give me 19.
Yeah, I'm looking at a website that says you've got 19 works. So
oh,
maybe
so
you've just lost count.
But maybe they're adding the kids to the book.
Maybe so.
That would get me to 19.
They are to include a number of just extraordinary works, including The Crusader, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of Communism, a book that I treasure about a hero of mine, the judge, William P. Clark, Ronald Reagan's top hand, and a whole series of books in which you've explored the religious beliefs and values of leaders of this country in a series that involves God and Ronald Reagan and God and George Bush and God and Hillary Clinton and so on. And anyway, it's a great privilege to have you with us, Paul Kenger, to talk about about kind of the historical record, most notably that of Ronald Reagan, but just our history as a nation. When we have practiced what Reagan famously called peace through strength, and where we have deviated from it, because my feeling is, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but that we're poised once again to embrace, for want of a better term, the philosophy of security that we aspire to despite our weakness. But I want to start with, what does your study of history, as a great scholar of it and recorder of it, tell you are the up and down sides of this principle and deviating from it?
Well, thanks. Really, just looking at the past 100 years, you don't even have to go back quite that far, but the 1930s. I mean, the 1930s, you know, we came back from World War One. And we downsized, to put it mildly. I mean, America cut back its military budget and defenses so much that when George C. Marshall came in and was chief of staff of the Army, and get this, his first day in office, Frank, was September 1st, 1939, which was the day that the Nazis invaded Poland. Yeah, just amazing. And at that point, various estimates said that the American military was 18th, 19th largest in the world behind Romania. I mean, we had something like 40 tanks in the entire army. And of course, I see that, saw that, as I think a lot of leaders did, as a green light that they could go into Europe. They didn't have to worry about the United States. And it would take us until 1942, I mean, months after Pearl Harbor, before we were up and ready to confront that challenge. You go to the 1970s, I mean, post-Vietnam, after Vietnam, the taking apart of the CIA and the intelligence community brick by brick, as some liberal congressmen were doing in the 1970s. Jimmy Carter, late 1970s. And I mean, the Soviets from 1974 to 79 picked up 10 or 11 proxy states in the Third World, and that was under détente. So I mean, at that point, as Ronald Reagan realized, you know, we were losing the Cold War at that point. So Reagan came in, tried to change that, implemented literal peace through strength. Reagan used that language, and by the end of the 1980s, we had so reversed the terms that we won the Cold War. Then you go again into the 1990s with the peace dividend, the cutting the defense budget. You know this better than me, Frank. I think in half, almost. And then suddenly you had, and your listeners would remember this. They're so well informed about this stuff. There was a North Korean military defector in the early 1990s who testified before our Congress on, don't dare do away with the two-war posture, because North Korean military officials have said that if the United States military DOD cuts back that far, they'll act against South Korea.
Right. Two-war, Paul, and it's important. Yeah, we're speaking with Dr. Paul Kanger of Grove City College, author of some large number of books, and not least a book about Ronald Reagan and the fall of communism. Paul, the two-war posture, I think, that you're referring to, of course, is one in which we built the capabilities to contend with two wars simultaneously.
Right.
And when we failed to do that, we risked having somebody say, well, we can start that second one while they're busy with the first.
Sure.
Let's talk a little bit about the probability that were we to go down the road that some are counseling, and I'm sorry to say some, and we'll speak about this in a moment, Republicans as well as many Democrats, that we deviate from this historical experience of building up our capabilities to prevent aggression, that we'll find ourselves, especially in the kind of world we're looking at now, Dr. Paul Kanger, confronting more aggression, more threats to our interests, perhaps threats to our people and our country itself.
Oh, I think so. And I mean, look, it's just common sense. I mean, people should realize if you're Maybe it's hard for people to realize because they're not as evil, as pernicious as a Kim Jong Il, as a Saddam Hussein, as an Osama bin Laden. But I mean, just as recently as the 1990s, and I believe it was Colonel Choi, it's coming to mind, who was this North Korean defector. He was saying this in the early 1990s, 93, 94, 95, and then we go into Bosnia, we go into the Balkans, 1997, 1998, and just around the corner from that is September 11th. Saddam Hussein was acting up during that time. You need to be able to have the capability in America as the world's only superpower, leading military power, to be able to commit to at least two wars at the same time. And what's happening right now, really the reason that we're having this conversation, of course, is that the progressives and liberals who are in charge right now, and President Obama in particular, when they get deficits, they look to two things. One, they look to tax increases, and then two, they look to spending cuts, but spending cuts only in the defense budget. And that has to be stopped because the problem, I've got a chart in front of me right here. It's from OMB Historical Tables, deficits from 1789, our budgets from 1789 until 2016. And from 1965 to 2009, this is amazing, Frank. People are going to find this hard to believe. From 1965 to 2009, the federal government did not decrease spending one single year. From 65 to 2009. But there were many times during that period when we cut defense spending. So defense spending isn't driving these deficits. It's spending overall. But you get people on the left who aren't strong in the military to begin with, and they got a deficit they want to cut, they look to the military.
Yeah. Paul Kinger is our guest, and one of your books is on dupes, how America's adversaries have manipulated progressives for a century, and I assume that this would be a prime example of that phenomenon. In the remaining minute we have, Paul Kinger, what would your message be based on your study of history to the American people as their elected representatives contemplate dramatic, in fact, I think, draconian cuts in defense at this time?
Yeah, well, and I would say that the people who fall into that camp, especially, conservatives and Republicans who are usually pretty strong on defense, I would say that they're being duped. I would say Warren Buffett is being a dupe by out there arguing that the rich aren't taxed enough. Well, come on, the top 10% pay far and away disproportionate share of tax revenues. So, I mean, the problem is spending generally, domestic spending, and don't be duped
entitlements
into thinking it's the military, the defense budget.
Yeah, and the consequences of being so duped would be grave indeed. Paul, we'll get that reference from you on the OMB data, and we'll put it up at the securefreedomradio.com website, and hope everybody will take a hard look at it and take a hard look at Paul Kinger's collected works. They're fabulous. Thank you so much for joining us, my friend. It's always
get
great to talk with you.
Get those tables and pass them around.
Pass them on. Exactly right.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And pass the ammunition, as they say. Paul, we'll be talking with you again soon. God bless
all
you
right,
in the meantime.
Care.
Next up, Dr. Zudi Jasser, one of the most courageous men I know, talking about the threat from the Muslim Brotherhood here in the United States. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy. Eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Metis system, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Metis system to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Metis system by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Metis system from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. I'm thrilled to say by one of the most courageous men I know in America today. His name is Dr. Zudi Jasser. He is a medical doctor, a retired lieutenant commander in the United States Navy, and a man who has created an extraordinary organization, well, actually two, starting with the American Islamic Forum on Democracy, a vehicle for promoting a moderate, tolerant, peaceable, law-abiding, pro-American vision of Islam. And even more noteworthy, recently he has helped to create a new leadership alternative to the Muslim Brotherhood's myriad front organizations in the United States called the American Islamic Leadership Council. And Zudi, it's terrific to have a chance to visit with you, as always, especially against the backdrop of some exciting new poll data that Muslim Americans, according to Gallup, do not, in fact, think that the Muslim Brotherhood's front organizations like the Council on American Islamic Relations represent them. I'm hoping that they will think that the American Islamic Leadership Council does. But tell us what your take is as a member of the Muslim American community is on both the role that the Muslim American organizations that are associated with the Brotherhood are playing and the degree to which there is a disconnect between them and the Muslim American community.
Well, Frank, again, thanks for all your work and thanks for having me on. And I can't tell you how much of an important issue this is about this poll. Number one, I'll remind people this poll was actually not done necessarily by objective people, not only sponsored by Gallup, but sponsored by Abu Dhabi. So we have to look at it with a grain of salt. I'll tell you why. I know many people are very excited about the information, and this is sort of data that we knew when I first formed our organization in 2003, and I saw CARE and MPAC and all these Brotherhood legacy groups speaking on our behalf. The vast majority of us said, you know what, nobody I know is a member of these groups, and they're really small representations, but yet they're well-funded, and they present themselves as speaking for the community, so where are the rest of the Muslims? Well, here's the issue, though. We've all known that there's been some studies. Only 30% of Muslims are even engaged or affiliated with anything Islamic, let alone mosques, et cetera. So if you take that number, then you say, well, 12% even identify with CARE spontaneously. That tells you they're getting close to half of affiliated Muslims into their organizations. And, you know, as much as I do love the fact that it still gives you 88% of Muslims that are not part of CARE. You know, to be honest with you, if we did how many know AIFD or how many know our American Islamic Leadership Coalition, it's probably in the low, low single digits. So, you know, this is something I hope people say, okay, we haven't lost the battle, but we need to now start taking sides. When you've got the White House coming out with a counterterrorism strategy that doesn't even identify ideology, they're talking about partnering with communities that include basically MPAC's strategy. It doesn't really bode well, and they're inviting people to the iftar dinners that include Islamists, and they ignore us. It doesn't bode well for us making a dent into those numbers because we need a major campaign to wake up those unaffiliated Muslims who basically came to the U.S. escaping these guys in the Middle East and their thuggery, and it's hard to get them. They say, you know, Zudi, I love what you're doing, but I just don't want to take on that battle. And the coalition leadership we put together at AmericanIslamicLeadership.org includes a lot of other groups that similarly are taking on this issue, but they say, you know, the Brotherhood's techniques scare away a lot of Muslims from joining us, and we need the support of the greater media, government platforms to say, you know what, come to these groups because these are the groups that we're going to acknowledge.
Great. I take your point that this is not entirely good news to the extent that there's a small active population and they are disproportionately engaged with the Muslim Brotherhood. It is of concern. Tell us more about the American Islamic Leadership Council and the alternative that you're trying to create as a vehicle for government and the media and others if they don't want to be either endorsing, legitimating, or otherwise enabling these groups that, to be, you know, clear, have an association with an organization whose mission statement, as you know so well, Dr. Zudi Jasser, in America is to destroy Western civilization from within. How can they become involved with your leadership council, and what can you do to provide this alternative to the Brotherhood's operations?
Well, you know, the point example is just two or three weeks ago, we rolled out a white paper that told the White House what its counterterrorism strategy was wrong in, and we had 13, 14 signatures of American Muslim, Canadian Muslim leadership that said the strategy should identify Islamism, not just say ideology without identifying what it is, that we're a diverse Muslim community, that currently the groups that speak for us are very monolithic, and if the White House truly, as many in the left of center liberal establishment like to talk about diversity, if they truly believe in diversity, then they have to acknowledge that our voices exist and also learn from the English example where they had a prevent strategy that failed miserably because they identified closely with the Brotherhood legacy groups there. and miserably failed because they didn't address ideology, and radicalism worsened, and now their second iteration of it is starting to take sides, and they're separating between engagement and empowerment. You know, even the police on the streets engage everybody, from gangs to thugs to everybody, because they want to know what's going on. But when it comes to empowerment, photo ops, speaking at dinners, media presence, etc., they're becoming very discerning to ones that are secular, liberal, Western narratives, period, that are reformists, etc., and that's where we are so far behind in the United States in doing any of that from a governmental standpoint.
Yeah, to the contrary, as you know so well, Dr. Zudi Jasser, we're finding that we have a government that is actually seemingly determined here in the United States under President Obama to make exactly the mistakes that the UK has been making until recently, and perhaps worse. Let me turn in the remaining couple of minutes we have with you, Zudi, to something you touched on a moment ago, that many Muslim Americans came here to get away from Sharia, the ideology, if you will, that has been used by the Islamists to try to impose their will on the rest of us, Muslim and non-Muslim alike, your own family included, as I recall, from Syria. Tell us what you make of what is going on in Syria today, and what should the United States government be doing there? I take it you're concerned that we are, in fact, embracing the Brotherhood there as well as elsewhere. What instead should we be doing?
Boy, you know, there's nowhere more of an example how rudderless and how little leadership is coming out of the White House and Washington nowadays than Syria. It seems like our foreign policy in the Middle East has turned into a first-come, first-served basis, where they helped in Libya and then now they've got some fatigue, where you have a country that's probably the toughest regime, the most militant, oppressive one, that is using tanks to surround cities, that's cut off electricity, you have people starving, our families are telling us they're barely able to know that they're going to have a meal, and yet you have a people that are rising up, doing economic sanctions against their own government by not working and demonstrating, and yet the West has taken almost 6 months now to do anything, and we finally have recognized that we've asked, told Assad to step down, and I think almost a little too late, but, you know, at least we're making some strides, but many of us are saying, you know, it's time to really do everything we can, pull out all stops, because there's probably no government more an American interest to get rid of in the Middle East and Syria because of its nexus with Iran and Hezbollah. And, you know, Secretary Clinton met with a few of the opposition and did a photo op 2 weeks ago. Two of them we know were Brotherhood affiliated. And at the end of the day, some of us have formed a Syrian Democratic Coalition that includes Kurdish, Assyrian, and others. We're also forming a broader coalition that may have a meeting. I can't really talk about too much, but we're working on a meeting in September, possibly in Europe, of a secular Syrian coalition that will include a vast array of groups that includes everybody except the Brotherhood. Because if there's any government that will not go towards Islamists, if we do it right, will be Syria because of how diverse that community is.
Yeah. Zudi Jasser, this is very exciting, needless to say. A Syrian democratic coalition that excludes the Brotherhood seems to me to be exactly what is needed here. And I pray that our government will empower as well as engage that organization and its members and your own efforts with the American Islamic Leadership Council and, of course, with your own organization, the American Islamic Forum on Democracy as well. Zudi Jasser, you're a stand-up guy for America. We're proud to have you as a colleague and a friend and very appreciative of the efforts you're making across all of these fronts to ensure that Muslim Americans have an alternative to those who seek our destruction, and that we in the sort of governing elite appreciate that that alternative exists and take full advantage of it. God bless you, sir. We'll look forward to visiting with you again in the very near future, and we'll look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow.
Thanks.
Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.